Now, do you have a will or some other kind of estate planning document? According to Caring.com, fewer of us have been taking care of that over the past few years. In a survey of 2,400 Americans, the number of adults with a will or another type of estate planning document decreased by 24% since 2017. And the study also shows that more people lack the knowledge and the resources to get a will. We're going to try to change that on this final day of National Make a Will Month. We'll also get into other matters of estate planning. Melinda Gustafson-Gervasi is an attorney in Madison who focuses on estate planning and probate. She's the author of Middle Class Philanthropist, How Anyone Can Leave a Legacy, and she blogs at GustafsonLegal.com. Melinda, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Keely. It's always a pleasure to be here.
What do you hear when we talk about those numbers that it seems fewer people are getting their estate planning in order?
I'm actually surprised by that study because over the 15 years of my practice, I've always seen the statistics hover around that 30 to 35% mark of people who've actually completed an estate plan. And I'd be curious to see a follow-up study because in the past 6 months, estate planning has been a priority for many people across the nation.
A third of us have planned for what happens when we die, when it's inevitable, and the other two thirds just haven't made it happen?
I think that's a good summary.
So you mentioned, especially in these past few months, the pandemic has changed life in so many ways. How is it affecting the way we approach these end of life decisions?
I think it's putting a sense of urgency on things that many people had on their to-do list, but never quite crossed off. At the beginning of the COVID outbreak here in Wisconsin, I noticed a large spike in the number of physicians contacting my office to explore estate planning. And now, as summer comes to an end and fall approaches, I've had an increase among educators that have this on their mind, and they're reaching out to find out about estate planning. So I do think, even prior to the pandemic, there's always some sort of nudge that gets people over that hump to make a call or to send an email. Many times in the past, it was a very bad diagnosis, sometimes a stage four cancer patient. People who are going to travel internationally were often motivated to do this. And then those that would be welcoming a child into their family felt compelled to do an estate plan. So I do think that, you know, COVID is just a different type of motivation for people to complete this.
Is it a different type of motivation for everybody? Or, I mean, you mentioned teachers. We also saw USA Today had a story about how teachers are drafting their will before they go back to school here. Is it affecting, is it motivating different people or in different professions?
You know, I think it's motivating most Americans, but I have seen, you know, my teachers as clients in the past would normally be people who would come in at the beginning of a summer to try to complete this process over the summer break. But now I'm seeing that uptick here during the fall or upcoming fall when I know they're busy with their lesson plans, as that article talks about, but they're also adding this difficult task or somewhat difficult task of putting their thoughts and wishes into a legal format.
We are talking with Melissa Gustafson-Gervasi, who wrote a book on leaving a legacy. She's an estate planning attorney, and we're talking about how you can plan for the future. The lines are open now at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Again, the number 800-642-1234 with your question as we talk about drafting a will, getting our final affairs in order. Melinda, we'll go into more detail, but generally speaking, what happens if we don't have estate planning documents ready to go?
Sure. Well, I think the word estate planning covers a large array of types of documents. To me, estate planning is planning for illness, planning for death, and planning for taxes. We'll focus just on the planning for death. If you pass away and you are a Wisconsin resident and you do not have a will in place, then you actually do have one. It's a default that is in the state statute. So essentially, you're letting the legislature determine where your probate assets would go. And I do want to emphasize it's your probate assets. Those are assets that don't have a co-owner or don't have a named beneficiary. Those assets would be distributed by the statutes through the court process known as probate. People also own non-probate property, And those are assets that do have something like a co-owner or a beneficiary form that's complete, some sort of label associated with the asset that says where that investment or asset would go upon their death. Those assets are not transferred through the probate process and are not controlled by a will. So if you don't have one, you're letting the state make a decision on it. And in terms of beneficiary forms, take your life insurance and you don't have that complete, then you're probably going to leave it up to the insurance company to make a decision. And it's usually embedded within their contract that you had when you set up that financial instrument. So you're losing control.
Melinda Gustafson-Gervasi is talking with us now, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. And Cyril in Madison has a question. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can I help?
I had a will made out several years ago. It was something I did through an online service. And I filled out the form online, and then they sent me a printed copy, which is my will. I'm wondering if I should have a lawyer review that to see if it's up to date and appropriate, or if I should have a new will made out, especially since so many years have gone by.
How many years has it been?
10 or more.
10 or more. Well, I think you should first start with having an expert review the document. You'll want to make sure that it was signed and dated and witnessed properly, because even if it's perfectly written but not dated properly, you run the risk of it not being a valid will. The other reason that you may want to have an expert, a lawyer, review it is sometimes I'll see clients who have done the same thing. They've taken control and done some paperwork on their own, but they make some assumptions. For example, that their spouse would just automatically be able to act, and then they name someone else. They've essentially written that person out. So there can be some tricky language depending on family structure and your wishes. I always think it's good to have an expert look over these things because it's vitally important, I think, to take control. And if it looks good, you probably don't need to update one. I generally aim, when I'm drafting a will for clients, for that to last them a few decades, assuming that there's not a huge change of events in their life.
Thanks so much for that question, Cyril. And Melinda, Susan writes, my parents had a trust and I still had to go through probate. Susan says, be sure you have a primary and at least one secondary beneficiary on everything. What do you think of that suggestion to make sure that there are enough layers of people to carry out your wishes?
Well, there's a couple of points embedded in that question. The first, I always think it's you must have a primary and a contingent. I know I'm sort of the depressing person because people will tell me who they want to act or where something should go. And then in that conversation, I kill that person off. And then I say, then who would it go to? And pre-pandemic, I used to keep chocolates in my office to perk people up when I asked those questions. So yes, I would agree with Susan, I think you said, that primary and a contingent is a goal to aim for. The other comment that she said about her parents having a trust, but they still had to go through probate, is a problem that we do see in this area of law. That probably meant that the parents had a trust document, but the trust had not been funded, meaning that the assets hadn't actually been put into the trust. If a trust is funded properly, the trust document, the trust agreement, is essentially a label and says where those assets will go upon death, thus keeping it outside of probate. If they had a trust and they had to go to probate, either all of the assets weren't in the trust, or perhaps they acquired a new asset and didn't put it into the trust. So if you're going to do a trust, I think it's essential in that area to seek out the guidance of an expert, specifically an estate planning and probate attorney. There are sometimes organizations that will try to talk to you about, 102 ways to avoid probate and come down for a free dinner at a new restaurant. More times than often, those might not be actual lawyers that are doing things, and thus they wouldn't have the capacity to retitle your home, for example, into the name of the trust. So it's proceed with some caution in that area.
We're talking with Melinda Gustafson-Gervasi about estate planning, about figuring out your will or a trust and making sure that your final wishes can be carried out after you die. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Larry in La Crosse is on the line. Hi, Larry.
Hello. Can you hear me now?
We can. What's on your mind?
Well, I hear estate planners and lawyers talk about how if you die without a will, it's the state legislature that determines how your probate is handled. But nobody ever says what that is.
All right, Larry, thanks for the question. What is probate?
Larry, was your question what is probate or what is the legislative plan?
What is the legislator's plan for your probate?
Sure. That's a great question. It's going to follow your statutory heirs. So it's going to go for first, do you have a spouse? If so, it goes to the spouse. If no spouse, it will then go down the family tree looking for children or grandchildren, etc. If there's no one going down, then it's going to go up. It'll look to your parents. If no parents, to your siblings. And it will go out, I think it's to like your third cousin twice removed or something to that extent. It's a quite extensive distribution. And I may have a outline of that on my website. I'm not sure. We just updated if that made it on or not. But there is a nice pictorial that I could share with you if you ever wanted to reach out through the blog or through my website.
All right. Thanks so much for that question, Larry. And we are talking about wills, probate, and other estate planning matters with Melinda Gustafson-Gervasi. She's an attorney who focuses on estate planning and probate. And you can join us. Do you have a will? What was it like putting it together? Email ideas at WPR.org to join the conversation. We continue this discussion in just a bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Keeley Boltina. It's National Make-A-Will Month, at least for another few hours. We're talking about what a will does and doesn't do, who needs one, what happens if you die without a will. Melinda Gustafson-Gervasi is an attorney in Madison who works on estate planning and probate, and we're taking your calls here on the Ideas Network. We've got Kelsey in Madison who wants to join the conversation. Hey, Kelsey.
Hi. Thank you so much for talking about this topic. I work professionally with dementia, helping my residents with their daily activities of living and helping their families navigate that transition. And when we talk about end-of-life planning, a lot of the times we talk about when we're, physically passed away. But many of us will encounter memory loss conditions if we live over 85. And so I just want to encourage everyone to make those plans, before you're approaching the end of life, because even the closest families can go through a lot of conflict and heartbreak if it's not clear what their loved one's wishes were, especially related to an activated power of attorney.
Kelsey, thank you so much for mentioning the healthcare power of attorney, durable power of attorney, even living wills here. Melinda.
Yes, I couldn't agree with Kelsey more. One thing from the will perspective, you don't want to be sick in the hospital and facing the reality of a upcoming death and making these decisions. It's just heart-wrenching for all involved. You also run the risk of losing capacity. You may not have the capacity to take care of things. And also during this current pandemic, there were points in time when a lawyer was not allowed access to a client that was in the hospital or in a hospice center. So this is not the time to wait for that. More importantly is the idea that Kelsey brought up too, is many things, we don't always die in a car accident swiftly. There can be a long debilitating illness. And so if you are alive, but too sick to make your own decisions, whether they be financial or in the health area, you can take control and create powers of attorney. Wisconsin has one for finance and the other for healthcare. And they allow you to say who's in charge of making those decisions for you, and then to have a backup or even sometimes a third person on there. And it's a crucial role, because if you don't have that in place, if you haven't taken the time to complete that paperwork and say who should act, someone from your family and friend network will need to likely go to court to file for guardianship. And that is just a financial expense, an emotional expense during a time when a loved one is very, very ill. And so if you can, take control now and put those wishes on paper and then go out and have a good time.
Thanks so much for that perspective, that idea, Kelsey. Now we've got Marcus in Milwaukee who has a question. Hi, Marcus.
Hi. So I do remodeling and construction. I cut my hand on the 25th and I almost bled out. So this is a very poignant topic for me. I do artwork just for personal relaxation, enjoyment, whatever, and I have over 350 pieces, which I would like to pass down to my children. Problem is I'm divorced. So what would I need to do in a situation with something like that?
Oh, Marcus, I'm glad you're okay, but thank you for bringing up that experience. Melinda?
Marcus, that's a great question. And I think what you're asking is, how can you have control over your artwork or any other assets that if you were to pass when your children were perhaps too young to take possession of them? Is that correct?
Correct.
Well, the answer is, if we want to have control after our death, a trust is the vehicle that we can do that with. And often you'll hear about the living revocable trust. Those are a complex and very pricey instrument to do that. But we also have something here in Wisconsin that's called a testamentary trust. So the others are living revocable trusts and are a lot more difficult to set up. A testamentary trust is a few paragraphs, somewhere between maybe an 8 to 10 paragraphs that are embedded in your will. And they say that the trust would come into existence only upon your death. So it's only upon the worst case scenario. And then you can appoint a person known as the trustee to manage the assets that are in the trust, and your will would be able to leave that artwork collection to the trust so that you know that a person who is going to follow your wishes is in charge of that. And you can set an age at which the children will be able to take possession of the artwork, or whether it was a life insurance policy or anything else that was in the trust. And I find those to be quite useful for many of my clients. They're much simpler to create. They're far more affordable to create. And the trust only comes into existence in that worst case scenario. And hopefully you'll reach a point where your children are old enough and you don't need it anymore, and you can just revert back to a basic will.
All right. We're talking with Melinda Gustafson-Gervasi, who's an attorney in Madison who focuses on estate planning and probate. And we're figuring out how to get things in line to make sure that what we want to have happen when we die actually happens. And we've got Mark from Neenah who wants to talk with us. Hi, Mark.
Hi there. I have a question. You brought up retitling assets. And
yes.
Our estate attorney is from, and you'd know the name, but I won't say it, a very large law firm in Appleton, Green Bay area. And I asked him like twice or three times, because my parents had a trust and they retitled their house and they retitled whatever. And he told us we didn't have to do that in Wisconsin because there's a part of the law that allows everything to just flow into the trust without having to retitle it.
All right. Mark, thanks so much. Melinda, what do you know about this area?
Mark, that is something I would want to look into more specifically. I know there are different vehicles from which you can transfer things into a trust that avoid the probate, or sometimes it's through a pour over will. Without knowing more facts about the situation and what type of trust your attorney set up, there's many different types. I wouldn't be able to say I wouldn't be able to comment thoroughly on what they had set up. I do know there are different instruments out there. Standard practice, things that I do in my office, would be to retitle those assets into the trust, because then I know with certainty they're in there, but I'm not going to second guess the work of another attorney without knowing more.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Melinda. What I hear Mark saying, too, is that he is kind of wondering, you know, is this attorney on the right track for what I'm looking for? If you find yourself in that position, what should you do as the client?
Well, first know that you have a right to your client file. And if you'd like to pull your client file from that office, you can go and seek other counsel. Proper format would be to tell the lawyer, thank you for the work you did, but I would like my client file. And then you can make an appointment with another estate planning attorney to review that situation. And the reason you do that is, if you already have an attorney, I, as a new attorney, would be prohibited from speaking to you about that because there's already an attorney assigned to the case. So that would be one step. And I do see people who come into my office and for whatever reason, they felt that their needs or their wishes maybe weren't heard correctly, or they just, attorneys have different styles of communicating. And, you know, if you're not comfortable with it, I would urge you to first maybe revisit with that attorney and give her or him a chance to explain again to you in very basic terms what they're using. You should have a very clear sense of what the law is and how the instrument works. And if you don't get that, then I would encourage you to talk around. If you have a CPA or a financial planner you work with, you could always ask them for a name of a referral for someone who's similar to how they run their practice. So if you like your CPA, who does your CPA recommend?
Melinda, Liz commented on our Facebook page, it costs so much money to hire a lawyer to do it. I don't have any extra to hire a lawyer. What do you do when a will is a top priority for you and you just don't know how to handle the cost?
Sure. Well, I think one is educate yourself on how much it costs. Many of my clients can be surprised at the cost of a simple basic will. It's a flat fee that they can work into a budget. There's all variety out there. If you are truly of limited means, you could contact one of the law schools here in the state to see if they have a clinic that could assist you at no cost. You'd be working with a law student under the supervision of an attorney. That's one option. And I know I haven't looked at it recently, but that the state law library sold for $10 a basic fill-in-the-blank will for Wisconsin. It may not work in everyone's situation, but I do think that there are probably more options out there than you might realize. And then attorneys don't always have to cost as much as maybe TV shows and movies make us appear to be.
So maybe worth a phone call to explain the situation, figure out how extensive your estate plan is going to be, and then you can make better decisions.
Correct. And I'll add that the more control that you're going to want to have, especially what we call dead hand control, the more complicated it is, the higher the cost will be. So if you can pick a main priority about having yourself organized or making sure like Marcus had said about controlling his artwork, that was a control issue. Some people want a simplicity issue. If you have one priority, I think the whole process will be easier and probably more affordable.
All right. Melinda, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Melinda Gustafson-Gervasi is an attorney in Madison who focuses on estate planning and probate. She's the author of Middle Class Philanthropist, How Anyone Can Leave a Legacy. You've been listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Join us again from 6 to 9 a.m. for the morning show. That is 6 to 9 a.m. right here on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.